Hi, this is Kathy coming to you today with the Herald and Review from Decatur. It is July the 10th, and I am going to start on the front page with the first article, which says, Living Science Takes Root. Enterprise School Program Will Help Ag Careers Blossom by Valerie Wells. Enterprise School is surrounded by acres of gently rolling ground, and up until very recently, that ground was unused. Now, thanks to a $1.65 million gift from the Howard G. Buffett Foundation, the Decatur School District is rolling out the Duane O. Andreas Ag Academy, including a living science farm which will use those empty acres. Our big driving force here is connecting kids to careers in ag, said Zach Shields, executive director of the Decatur Public Schools Foundation. The first step was the creation of an extensive pumpkin patch earlier in June, with the hope that it will produce enough pumpkins for every student in Enterprise and Garfield Montessori School to have one of his or own. Eventually, the patch might produce enough pumpkins for every student in the district, Shields said. With the help of Mac Condell, owner of the Great Pumpkin Patch, several varieties of pumpkins were planted, and thanks to the extensive rain recently, now it's just a matter of waiting for pumpkins, said Ann Matheson, principal of Enterprise. It really ties into the Montessori philosophy of meaningful work, Matheson said. The kids are really going to learn about nature and nurture living things. We'll be having them outside, learning not only the life cycle of plants, but there are going to be so many benefits. When we expand and partner with the ag program from the high schools, we'll be able to have livestock and have the students able to take responsibility for caring for livestock, too. It will be a huge benefit to our kids. Enterprise is progressing toward a full Montessori program by adding one grade a year, and in two more years, the entire pre-6th through 6th grade building will be Montessori. Garfield has been fully Montessori for several years and serves grades pre-K through 8. A large component of Montessori is hands-on learning, growing things, and self-directed learning. Both Montessori schools have 4-H, and all the other elementary schools will too, Shields said. The whole district will be involved in the agricultural activities. Only 2% of the careers in agriculture is on a tractor on a farm, Shields said. Everything else is commodities, or engineering, or welding, or transportation, supply chain, things like that. The original idea was that in the beginning, the Ag Academy could serve about 50 students each at MacArthur and Eisenhower High Schools, beginning with an introduction to agriculture class and expanding each year. But thanks to a visit from students who attended the Chicago High School for Agricultural Sciences, whose program inspired Decatur's 198 students have signed up for the Ag Academy already. They talked about the experiences they had, said Michael Dugan, assistant superintendent for secondary. We let them speak about the program and how it's benefited them. Decatur High School freshmen typically take a freshman seminar class designed to help them transition into high school, strengthening reading and study skills, Dugan said. Students in the Ag Academy will take the agriculture class instead, in which they will learn those skills plus public speaking, design, and complete projects and compete in the national FFA organization through the new FFA chapters at both high schools. The grant from the Buffett Foundation will pay for two buses, one for each school, that will be available to transport the students to FFA competitions and to the Living Science site as they gain experience in agriculture. Everybody in the FFA community has been supportive, Dugan said. It's competitive, but they want it to increase for everybody. They really want to see everybody do well. The program is founded on FFA principles, and those will provide the structure, Shields said. The grounds at Enterprise will eventually include plots for several different agricultural projects and possibly beehives as well. Assistant Superintendent for Elementary Bobby Williams has beehives at her home, Dugan said, and the students could begin learning about beekeeping with those, eventually having their own hives at Enterprise. The produce grown on the grounds of the Living Science Farm also could be used in the district schools as part of a healthy eating program. The Living Science Farm has a couple of purposes, Shields said. One of them is to provide hands-on learning for the kids at that site and for other elementaries, and the other is for our high school kids to go and actually work on projects, work on prairie grass restoration, or eventually we'll have some livestock there. Ann Matheson wants an alpaca, he added with a chuckle. And some particulars about the Ag Academy. It will blend classroom and laboratory instruction with supervised agricultural experiences and student leadership organization FFA activities. It is a 4-year pilot program with plans to continue indefinitely once it's established. Decatur's schools have previously placed little emphasis on agricultural careers, though local resources are available to support such programming, and local jobs are available for students who choose that path. Programs commence in August with 198 students registered so far. And now from the A3 section, Injured Baby Hospitalized, Father Jailed on Aggravated Battery Charge by Tony Reed. A 30-year-old Taylorville father appeared in Christian County Circuit Court on Monday afternoon and was charged with aggravated battery after his 4-month-old baby was found unresponsive by the Taylor Police Department. That's Taylorville Police Department. Chad Johnson did not enter a plea and remained in custody in the Christian County Jail with bond set at $750,000. He is also charged with violating an order of protection and has an outstanding warrant for larceny, according to Taylorville Police Chief Brian Heil. Heil said a 2-year-old child was also taken into protective custody by the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services. Officers went to the 100 block of East Main Cross at 10:32 a.m. Friday in response to a 911 call from the father, Heil said. The baby was taken to Taylorville Memorial Hospital by the Taylorville Fire Department and then moved to HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield. Heil said it was later determined that the baby had severe head injuries, and he said Monday he had not heard of any change in the baby's condition. I know that they, meaning the hospital medical staff, were still evaluating things, he said. Heil said the charge against Johnson could change if the baby's condition worsens. Aggravated battery of a child is a Class X felony. The chief said officers described the living conditions where the baby was found as appalling, and he said the baby was housed in a run-down, privately owned apartment building. Actually, we've contacted city officials to take a look at the apartments and try to address it, he said. The conditions in the apartment upstairs where the baby was found were just horrendous. I saw that. I was up there, and it was nothing an adult ought to live in, let alone children. Heil said that neighbors spoke with police and mentioned being concerned about the way the older child was being raised, and apparently there had been some calls to DCFS. Heil said the case has taken a toll on those dealing with it, from police officers and firefighters to medical staff and members of the public aware of the details. Something like this really hits home, he said. The chief said the case remains an active investigation and involves his department, Illinois State Police, DCFS, and the state's attorney's office. He said the department would release more information as it became available, including reports from medical staff. Police still want to hear from anyone with information about the case. Call the Taylorville Police Department at 824-2211 or Crime Stoppers at 1-800-568-8477. And this headline, Workshops to Aid with Job Fair Prep. Workforce Investment Solutions and State Representative Sue Shearer, Democrat of Decatur, are holding a community-wide job fair from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Wednesday, July 18th at the Knights of Columbus Hall at 520 East North Street in Decatur. Employers from a variety of industries, including healthcare, manufacturing, service, hospitality, and logistics, will be accepting resumes. In addition, there will be agencies distributing information on resources for the unemployed and underemployed. Job seekers are encouraged to attend special workshops before the job fair in order to increase their chances of obtaining an interview and job offer. Those special workshops will be held at 10 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. on Wednesday, July 11th and Thursday, July 12th at Workforce Investment Solutions at 757 West Pershing Road. The free workshops will cover interviewing tips, how to dress for a job fair, and strategies for making the best of your time at the job fair. These 15 to 20 minute workshops will be offered simultaneously 4 different times over 2 days. Within an hour, a person can pick up crucial pointers on how to make the job fair successful, and a certificate will be given for completing job fair preparation workshops. Workshop reservations are not required, but calling Workforce Investment Solutions at 875-8751 is encouraged. Registration underway for the first gig camp by Jalen Cook. Budding young musicians are invited to learn from the pros during the first gig rock and roll camp, which runs from Monday, July 23rd to Friday, July 27th at Millikan University. Various Central Illinois musicians will teach students between the ages of 10 to 17 the skills needed to become a professional musician during the week-long camp, which also provides daily lunches and a t-shirt to participants. The camp costs $250 for Decatur Park District residents and $275 for non-residents. Each day of camp begins at 9 a.m. and ends at 5 p.m., and a performance is scheduled for noon, Saturday, July 28th, at the Decatur Civic Center, and will conclude this year's program. The camp, which is in its fifth year, is affiliated with the Decatur Park District and coordinated by local musician Mickey Shoneman. A fundraiser to support this year's program was held in March. Students can register online at decatur-parks.org or by visiting the Park District's administrative office at 620 East Riverside Drive. Registration ends on Tuesday, July 17th. Those interested are asked to email firstgigdecatur@gmail.com for more information. States target no poaching. Critics claim clauses limit workers' pay. Illinois and 10 other states are investigating hiring practices that critics say prohibit minimum wage workers from seeking better positions or pay at different fast food franchises within the same restaurant chain. In an effort led by Massachusetts Attorney General Mara Healey, the attorneys general from 11 states sent a letter Monday to 8 fast food chains asking them to provide documents, including copies of franchise agreements and communications related to no poaching provisions by August 6. The chains are Arby's, Burger King, Dunkin' Donuts, Five Guys Burgers and Fries, Little Caesars, Panera Bread, Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, and Wendy's. The provisions in question prohibit franchisees from hiring workers away from other restaurants within the same chain. Restaurant owners say the policies are meant to protect the investments they've made in training employees, but critics argue that they limit workers' mobility and hold down wages, even amid an increasing competitive job market. Among major franchisers, 56% have no poach provisions in their franchise agreements, and the number is even higher at 80% for fast food franchisers, Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan's office said in a news release. No poach agreements trap workers in low-wage jobs and limit their ability to seek promotion into higher-paying positions within the same chain of restaurants, Madigan said in the release. I am investigating how this practice because it unfairly stops low-income workers from advancing and depresses their wages. Chicago-based McDonald's removed the no-poaching clause from its standard franchise contract in 2017 after employees filed antitrust lawsuits against the company. The investigation by the attorneys general was prompted by a February study from economist Alan Krueger of Princeton University and Eric Posner of the University of Chicago Law School that showed a nearly 50% increase in the use of no-poaching clauses among major franchisers in the last two decades. These contractual devices give the employers more power to suppress wages, Posner said. Despite the booming labor market, there hasn't been an increase in wages as you'd expect. One thing people don't understand is when employers complain they can't fill vacancies, what they're really saying is they're not willing to raise wages to a level that would attract people, he added. Dunkin' Donuts does not have any provisions in its franchise agreement that prohibit franchisees from hiring workers from other restaurants within the chain, spokeswoman Carrie Reichert said. All Dunkin' Donuts restaurants are independently owned and operated by individual franchisees, independent business owners solely responsible for running their day-to-day operations, including all employment decisions, the company said in a statement provided by Record. As a franchisor, we are not in position to intercede in franchisees' employment matters. The company said employees are free to seek employment wherever they please. Wendy's spokeswoman Heidi Schauer said in an email that the company does not impose any restrictions that prohibit franchisees from hiring or soliciting employees from other franchises. We do not have an anti-poaching provision in our franchise agreement, she said. Arby's, Burger King, Five Guys, Little Caesars, Panera, and Popeyes did not respond to requests for comment. Illinois has previously cracked down on franchises that require low-wage employees to sign non-compete agreements, prohibiting workers from taking jobs at competing chains. Madigan's office sued Champaign-based sandwich chain Jimmy John's in 2016 for what it called highly restrictive non-compete agreements. The company settled with Madigan's office in December of 2016 for $100,000. The following month, an Illinois law took effect that prohibits non-compete agreements for employees earning less than $13 an hour. And a police report says the homeowner surprises the burglar, by Tony Reed. A startled burglar, suddenly confronted by a Decatur homeowner, told the man he had the wrong house and fled by climbing back through the window he'd just entered, police said. A sworn affidavit from Decatur police officer Jamie Hagemeyer said the burglary occurred the night of February 15th, and police tracked down and arrested the man accused of the burglary at 1 a.m. Saturday. The homeowner had noted the registration of the burglar's getaway car and later picked him out of an electronic photo lineup, Hagemeyer said. The 25-year-old man was jailed on a preliminary charge of residential burglary, which is subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney's Office. Hagemeyer said the homeowner told police he had been napping in his home in the 500 block of East Johnson Avenue on February 15th when he woke up to the sound of a knock at the door. When he looked out, no one was there, but he saw the man he came to recognize as the burglar walking to a maroon SUV parked next door. The homeowner lay down again, ready to resume his nap, when he heard the sound of a window in an adjacent room being forced open, the affidavit said. He told the police he went to investigate and came face to face with the man, who acted surprised to see him, the affidavit said. The homeowner said he untruthfully informed the subject the police had been notified, Hagemeyer said. The homeowner stated the subject responded that he had the wrong house before climbing back out the window and running back to the maroon SUV. The man remained in the Macon County Jail on Monday in lieu of $60,000 bond. This next headline, merger hinges on local Acorn plant. A consultant hired to inspect drug maker Acorn Pharmaceuticals' Decatur plant discovered that a camera used to record vials didn't correctly store photos to ensure safety and cleanliness, Bloomberg reported Monday. German healthcare company Fresenius Kabi is trying to back away from a $4.3 billion deal to buy Acorn because the company alleges manufacturing problems. Acorn, based in Lake Forest, is asking the Delaware Chancery Court to force the merger to continue. Bloomberg reported that Kim Wasserkrug, an Acorn vice president, told Chancery Court Judge Travis Laster that the consultant warned them about issues in Decatur and Somerset, New Jersey. Fresenius also says Acorn pressured workers to manipulate data about testing on drugs. Acorn has denied wrongdoing. The company operates a plant at 1222 West Grand Avenue and a packaging center on Wycliffe Road. It also has facilities in Gurnee and Vernon Hills. The company makes generic and branded prescription drugs, over-the-counter consumer health products, and animal health pharmaceuticals. It had a revenue of $1.1 billion last year. And from the briefs, Decatur officer injured in crash. A Decatur police vehicle and a pickup truck were involved in a crash on North 22nd and US 36 Monday evening, injuring an officer. Decatur Fire Department Captain Mike Emmert said a female police officer was taken to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital to be treated for injuries not considered serious. A male officer and the driver of the pickup truck refused treatment at the scene. The crash was called in at 6:30 p.m. Southbound 22nd Street has reduced to one lane for a time as emergency responders worked at the scene. Both vehicles had front-end damage, according to Herald and Review reporter. The police vehicle was towed. The pickup was able to be driven away. Decatur Police Sergeant Tony Tertoka said the crash was still under investigation late Monday night. He said he could not immediately provide further information. Rollover hospitalizes man. From Bluff City, a 22-year-old man was airlifted to HSHS St. John's Hospital in Springfield after a single vehicle crash in Fayette County on Sunday, Illinois State Police said. Initial investigation shows that the driver, Eric C. Gertner of Brownstown, was traveling south on Fayette County Road 1200 East shortly before 4 p.m. and lost control near County Road 1900 North, just north of Bluff City. His 2010 Chevy Camaro left the roadway, crossed the ditch, and struck an embankment, causing the car to go airborne and Gertner to be ejected. The car overturned and came to rest in a pasture fence, police said. There were no passengers. No charges have been filed, but the investigation continues. Identity theft alleged. A Decatur woman is facing a preliminary charge of identity theft after police said she ran up a power bill in her stepsister's name that came to more than $1,500. The stepsister contacted police in April to file a complaint, and a sworn Decatur police affidavit, said that officers caught up with and arrested the 38-year-old suspect late Friday afternoon. The preliminary charge against her is subject to review by the Macon County State's Attorney Office. Police said the stepsister told them the delinquent bill in her name, covering 9 months of electrical service from between August 2012 and April 2013, was affecting her financially. And looking at some sports, Sullivan lands the boys' basketball coach, Craig Black, hired to lead the program from Sullivan by Mike Monahan. Craig Black is going home. The 2007 Sullivan graduate was named the head boys' basketball coach at a special Sullivan board meeting on June 29th. He replaces Chet Reeder, a Sullivan graduate who left the Redskins to take the head boys' basketball coaching position at Tutopolis in mid-June. "It means quite a bit to be named the head coach," Black said. "I get to be back in the area where my family and his fiancée's parents are. I get to be back at the high school where I played. I can't remember the last time I watched a game at Sullivan High School. It will be cool to get back in the gym and see what it is like on the coaching end of things." Black has coached at 50 in Oakwood for the last four seasons, compiling a 71-43 record. He will teach physical education at Sullivan. "Anytime you lose a coach in the summer, you want to move as quickly as you can to get a person hired so that they still have a chance to be with the team in the summer," said Sullivan Athletic Director Ryan Aikman. "I like the fact that Craig Black comes with some experience, 4 years of varsity with some success. That's always an appealing thing. The other thing I like, and it is the same thing as Coach Meyer's new football coach, is that he really wants to be at Sullivan. In the interview, he really came across as wanting to be at Sullivan for the long haul. I think he does a good job relating to the kids." Black was a freshman coach and varsity assistant under Doug Robinson in 2012 and 13 and 2013-14 before taking over as Oakwood's head coach. He went 23-8, which was the most wins since the 1989-90 team went 23-6. His second season at Oakwood went 15-12 and was 14-13 in 2016-17. Last season, the Comets won the Vermilion Valley Conference and the conference tournament. It was the first time in 32 years that Oakwood swept the conference and conference tournament titles. "It was a tough decision," Black said of leaving. "I was not looking around or applying anywhere. When I found out, I looked into it and got an application, and it happened really fast, and it happened out of nowhere." Black was also the track coach at Oakwood for five seasons and was an assistant volleyball coach the last two seasons. "I was always interested in coming back to Sullivan," said Black. "The administration is good, and there are some teachers who were there when I was there. I got close to the group that are going to be seniors at Oakwood, and that was the hardest part, not being able to coach those guys next year. I enjoyed my time at Oakwood. The administration was really good, and I got close to a lot of players. That's the hard part. When I told them, they were disappointed with my decision, but understood." At Sullivan, Black played under Scott Bales all 4 years and earned honorable mention Illinois Basketball Coaches Association All-State honors his senior year as a 6'1" guard. He averaged 10.4 points, shooting 46% from the field and 35% from a three-point range as well, as 79% from the free throw line for the 9-16 Redskins. He also was in track 1 year and was in football all 4 years. Black has talked to two returning assistant coaches, Eric Van Pelt and Greg Toller, and met the players at an open gym on Monday. "I will bring what we did at Oakwood," said Black. "We will do a little of both defensively man and zone and mix in things. Some of the stuff they have already done under Reeder. Offensively, we will be different from what they have done. Reeder left the program in a good spot." Sullivan was 10-17 last year and 3-4 in the Central Illinois Conference. The Redskins graduated six players. Among the expected returners is Caden Ellis, an honorable mention All-CIC player. As for assistant coaches, Aikman knows it was important to have them stay. "They know everybody, and I have worked with them for a number of years," said Aikman. "They will be able to help Coach Black as he gets acclimated to them, and it will help him learn the strengths and weaknesses of the team so that he can work to improve the team." The first day teams can officially start practice is November 5th. Also in sports, getting better as he goes. ALAH's Hall saved his best lap for last at state by Matthew Flatten. From Arthur, the 2018 track season didn't start off the way Logan Hall wanted. Hall and Arthur Lovington Atwood Hammond Sr. was coming off a state title in the 3200 as a junior and was invited to run at the Arcadia Invitational in California, an event that brings together top high school runners from across the country in April. Hall met some adversity. "I just didn't run very well, and it just kind of opened my eyes that you aren't going to get everything you want," Hall said. But Hall didn't come home discouraged. He continued to work hard in preparation for the season, and in his final race of the year, it paid off. Hall took second in the 3200 and won the state title in the 1600. The performance earned Hall the Herald and Review Area Boys Track and Field Athlete of the Year. But with a lap to go in Hall's final race, he was staring more disappointment in the face. He was in fifth place and wasn't feeling well. But after missing out on the 3200 state title, he said he wasn't going to let the chance of going out with a state title pass him by. "I kind of stuck in a good position, was ready to give it a shot," Hall said. "With like 250 meters to go, I started pulling up next to guys in lanes 2 and 3 and made my move and didn't look back and just tried to charge down the home stretch and get another state title. That's when the hard work Hall put in following his California trip kicked in. At the end of the season, I was in the best shape I've ever been in my life," Hall said. "I was having confidence. I'd run a 4:16 at sectionals, which was a personal record for me at the time, and I felt pretty easy, so I was like, wow, I am in good shape, and I kind of took that to the state meet." A highlight of Hall's senior year was the chance to run with his brother, Leighton Hall, who was a freshman. Leighton qualified for the state meet in the 3200, and his performance was eerily similar to his older brother's freshman year. "As a freshman, I made the slow heat of the 2 mile, and I was the fastest seat in the slow heat, and Leighton did the exact same thing," Logan said. The next season, as a sophomore, Logan finished second in the 3200. "It's just cool to see the progress that Leighton has made and where he is and where I was as a freshman," Logan said. With Logan's gold in the 1600 and silver in the 3200, his track and cross-country medal collection sits at 9. Not bad for someone who was told when he was younger that running was a waste of his time. Hall will continue his running career at the University of Illinois. "I had people tell me that I wasn't going to go anywhere with running, and I just found the love for the sport and kept working hard at it," Hall said. "Even after running in high school and having some success, I never thought I was going to be able to go D1 for running at all. At the beginning of my junior year, that started to become a reality. I just had my orientation at the University of Illinois. It is just crazy." Hall said running for the Illini next year might include a shift in focus to longer events, a reality he's already started preparing for. "Usually when you go to college, you move up in distance, so I'll probably be a 5K, 10K guy, maybe even steeplechase over the water," he said. "I have a pretty lightweight body, so who knows, that could be my specialty. A couple of times in practice, I've done half marathons without really trying. That's just how my training was. I do 13 to 15 miles in practice. I think I get better as I go." And I think we'll stop right there. We're kind of at a natural point. This will be the end of part one of the Decatur Herald and Review. Give me a couple of minutes and I'll be right back with part two.